It's an honour to be standing here in front of you this afternoon. I've come from a company that's called Hydrogen Energy. Now, it's the nicest little energy company that nobody's ever heard of. We were formed in May of this year. We have the parents of BP and Rio Tinto. It's a 50-50 joint venture. And our focus is on the development of projects. We're a project-focused company. Our focus is to develop projects that decarbonise fossil fuels by gasifying into hydrogen and carbon dioxide, taking the hydrogen to the clean-burning hydrogen to electricity generation, either our own kit or selling the fuel to somebody else. Both are good. And storing CO2 into geological formations. So we've announced a few projects around the world, and we're actively pursuing opportunities in other places. I expect that in the coming months you will hear some more announcements from us, but not today. One of the projects that we do talk about is a project in Kwinana, and that's a town south of Perth in Western Australia. And I could show you a little picture. There you go, there's just a little cartoon of it. The one thing I can promise you about that picture is that the plant won't look like that. Now the concept for this plant is that it will take round about 2 to 3 million tonnes per annum of coal from the Collie region of Western Australia. That's a sub-bituminous coal. We intend to generate in the neighbourhood of 500 megawatts of baseload electrical power, possibly some other products, for example steam or hydrogen, to sell to the neighbouring community, the neighbouring industry. And most importantly, what we would do then is take the resulting 5 or 6 million tonnes per annum of carbon dioxide and we would store it in an offshore saline aquifer. But it's pretty early days and we have lots of challenges. But before I get into some of those challenges, I just want to just touch on why. Now this chart, we've discussed things like that already today, and you don't need to be able to read the fine print from the back of the room. The point of the chart is that there's a big yellow bar there. That big yellow bar is coal. And the inference that I'm trying to draw is that the world has got a lot of coal and it's distributed all over the world. So uranium's important, and one of our owners, Rio Tinto, has got a particular interest in that. Gas is important. We have an owner called BP who's got a particular interest in that too. And renewables are vital. And one of our owners, BP, has got a very material solar business right here in Australia. BP Solar is a leading player in that field. And we're growing material wind business. But the reality, looking at that chart, reality is that for the foreseeable future, the world is going to use a lot of coal. So alongside our support for all of those other energy sources, it's vital we have a clear focus on doing something about dealing with the carbon dioxide emissions from coal. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that coal is a single answer. All of these are important. Renewables are important. I don't think there is a silver bullet for climate change. It's becoming increasingly clear that we need all of the available technologies, and clean coal is but one. But it does have the potential to be deployed at significant scale in the not-too-distant future if we deal with a few issues. So first I'd like to address with the question of economic policy support, or frankly how to overcome the obvious gap in cost between clean power and conventional power. I'll show you another one of my cartoons. All right. Now this diagram is simply for illustration. I'm a simple engineer. I'm absolutely not going to attempt to predict the values of these various components. But it does show you the kind of buckets of income that we're going to need to think about to make projects like this fly, and how confidence in them needs to increase over time before finally we have the ability to sanction a project. Now the first bucket of income is, the black one is the market price of power. And like most people, we anticipate some modest increases in power prices going forward. When we first announced the Kwinana project, which was in May, that's the first circle on the left, this was the only source of income that we could really put our hands on. It's not enough. The price of electricity in Australia is relatively low in world terms. I think Ziggy made this point really quite well, and this is largely thanks to an abundance of low-cost coal. The other thing about Australia is we have a relatively benign regulatory regime for emissions. And that's resulted over the years a fleet of power generation equipment with relatively low efficiency compared to best practice. So while there's been no restriction on carbon emissions, this has been good for the Australian economy. We've had cheap power. But what it does do is it makes the step from the practice now into a low-carbon world look more difficult. Now, one of the drivers for that change is going to, of course, be emissions trading. Now, high carbon price will shift the economic optimum in plant configuration that we used to have and push it towards a higher efficiency plant. That's a good thing. I believe that emission trading will, in the long term, provide all of the incentives that we need to meet our emissions target. But the issue for me is going to be certainty and pace. So recently we've had some other announcements made. I've labelled this as the clean energy target, but the exact nature of that's become a point of difference in parties in the current election. One party has low carbon emitting technologies included in that, another one has excluded it and put it in a different scheme. They're both fine for me, I don't mind. So that takes us to about the second circle today, where project developers who are looking to make investment in low emission plant could expect to receive some funds by way of actions of the emission trading scheme and some funds by way of a clean energy target like scheme. The issue is that I don't know how much and I don't know when, and I certainly can't take it to the bank to finance a project. So a lot more definition and consequently time is going to be necessary before investment decisions of this kind of scale can be made. So I make two additional points about stimulating action ahead of these market mechanisms. First point is there's a basic truth that the first generation of clean coal power stations are going to bear costs that the second generation won't. Real progress is only going to be made when there's a market demand to satisfy. So the first generation of plant will create the demand. By that demand I mean for the equipment suppliers. First generation of plant will create the demand. Innovation will certainly follow, and the second generation of plants will benefit. Trouble for the first movers is that these plants are very long-lived. Almost by definition, first movers are going to be competitively disadvantaged by what replaces them. First movers are going to need some level of capital support, otherwise they'd much rather be second movers. And there's a growing realisation of this. The UK government recently announced its intention to have a competition for allocating such capital support based on one of the clean coal technology pathways. Here in Australia, House of Representatives Standing Committee on Science and Innovation has called for a similar competition. This is good news, and it has to happen, but as of today, it's not in place, and we need it. Second issue that I wanted to refer to is this comparison of advanced low emission technologies to the current fleet of generators I alluded to before. Now this comparison will be and has to be made, but I think there's a bit of context that we need in making that comparison. The low emissions coal projects of the sort that we're discussing are going to leapfrog existing standards. There's going to be negligible particulates, negligible sulphur dioxide and nitrogen oxides, and of course much lower CO2. So this, compared to a fleet where SOx and NOx treatments are virtually non-existent, is a big change. Now, as an inhabitant of this planet, I'd like to think that there would be no more conventional-fired coal power stations built. But I'm not really suggesting a new set of regulations. What I'm simply pointing out is that comparisons between the old and the new, particularly here, need to be made with that understanding that we're coming from a low base. And so the last little wedge of funding that I put up there, I would frankly expect to be smeared over the lower ones. It's an important piece for us to understand, is that we have a long way to travel. So in summary on that picture, I think the market mechanism such as emission trading should be the centrepiece of policy and will drive the required behaviours in the long term. But I think short-term measures are going to be needed to give the certainty required for early movers. Now, let me turn to the issue of legislation for carbon capture and storage. I'm going to be followed by Peter Cook, who has followed me a couple of times, in this talk, and he's going to speak with far more authority than me on the technical challenges of CCS, so I'll leave that to Peter. I want to confine my comments to what I think are the commercial challenges as I see them as a potential market participant. The regulatory framework to allow allocation of permits to explore for and develop geological formations for carbon storage is essential. It's a key plank of finding a way to maintain the value in Australia's carbon-intensive resource base in a carbon-constrained world. Fortunately, Australia is leading the way. We expect to see draft of this new legislation quite shortly. But storage space is it's a new sovereign resource that nations like Australia are only really just beginning to discover that they have, and we're still learning what its true value is. And I think it's essential that access to this new resource follows the standard rules for public resource allocation. That is, it is to be let to private companies on the basis of fair, transparent competition, and that the areas selected for gazettal are selected on a scientific basis as those that are most prospective. This means that existing rights holders, such as those with hydrocarbon interests over the same area, should not have a right of veto or appropriation over these resources, in my view. But that doesn't mean that Australia can ride roughshod over existing users of a piece of land or seabed and allocate just willy-nilly somebody the right to start injecting CO2 in it. That would be unacceptable, in my view. One of the most contentious issues in the development of this legislation has been the question of how these new CO2 property rights will interact with existing property rights, especially those in the oil and gas industry. I think this has been a bit of a distraction, frankly. Of course the property rights of existing stakeholders should be protected. Australia's got a rigorous approval system. It's not possible for a developer to commence work on a site before rigorously detailing and explaining how they intend to mitigate their impact on a range of outside interests, on flora, fauna, local communities, local industries and the like. The onus is on new project proponent to demonstrate it won't be damaging to the interests of the other stakeholders, and this approvals process is robust and transparent and well understood. But even if we get through all of that, we still have and have the necessary legislative framework in place, we've still got a fairly significant catch to overcome. To prove up the sequestration potential of a given formation, I can easily imagine that we're going to want to go and shoot for three-dimensional seismic data over a large area, and I would fully expect that we would need to drill a couple of exploration wells to get to log the well and to get some rock samples. Those of you familiar with the offshore oil industry will be aware that it's pretty easy to spend $100 million doing that. In the oil and gas industry, these high costs are offset by the potential of a discovery of something valuable. This is the nature of exploration risk, and it's what resource companies do. That's all fine. But in this emerging industry, we don't know whether a technical exploration success is going to have any value. And that's because we haven't really got answers to the things that I talked about on the slide before. So it's going to be very difficult to justify going out and spending that sort of capital with that risk unresolved. And this gets us to the catch. If it's hard for project developers like me to wrap their heads around spending money to resolve the exploration risk until the government policy is in place, I think it's also going to be hard for governments to allocate support to a particular project unless the project's resolved the exploration risk. I think that bidding on the coming round of CCS acreage is going to cause stress for a lot of project proponents. And I would urge policymakers to consider ways that allocation of this acreage and the provision of financial support could be aligned. I think just waiting for the market to resolve that is going to take too long. Right. So, some of you may have noticed that I haven't talked about technology, and that's because, in my view, low emission from coal is not really a technology issue. We've got all of the components. It's about integration. It's a question of economics for me. Because some of the components aren't as reliable and as efficient as we want, it means that to build these plants now, we naturally have to go more conservative and build more things than we need. We have to do that. The only way that you discover what conservatism you don't need in design is through real life operations. That's the kinds of things that you don't get out of laboratory work. We have to do this at scale. To make this happen, early movers are going to need economic support before the market mechanisms become effective, and they're going to need this clarified before coming up with the large amounts of money required to prove up geological storage sites. I'm confident these issues can be resolved. They have to be. I'd like to get started on transforming the generation fleet now. Thank you.